Pensacola's first choice for morning news, traffic, sports, and talk. The Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. Good morning, Pensacola.
The Citizens Police Advisory Committee to continue in existence?
I believe they're getting their report to us, and they will have concluded what we asked them to do, and certainly appreciate their service, and we'll look at their report and we'll get moving on seeing what we can do.
So that wasn't the answer I was exactly expecting. Mayor Robinson, the critics of Mayor Robinson are going to say that a lot of times he doesn't exactly directly answer the question. And when he does, you kind of got to decode it out of the Groverese, you know, just the way he talks. Now, I speak pretty fluent Groverese at this point. So I don't, you know, I know what he's saying, even if I think sometimes it's hard to understand just because of the way he kind of talks about a lot of these issues. But other criticism is that even when you can speak, you know, the way, understand what he's talking about a lot of times, he doesn't answer the question or doesn't give you a direct answer. This is pretty direct. This is, I'm done with the Citizens Police Advisory Committee.
So you expect them to disband after the report's issued, this like in a month or two?
I think that was communicated to the group.
Well, no, they were talking about the desire to continue in existence. That's why I was asking you whether you wanted them to continue operating or not.
Well, I think they've served their purpose.
The Citizens Police Advisory Committee, of course, formed after the protests against the George Floyd killing this last year. And, of course, they're now just finally seating jurors in that trial. And then, you know, there was the Tamar Crawford incident the year before. You had the nationwide protests against perceived racial injustice. Sometimes, yes, definitely injustice. Other times, not so much. But they all get lumped in together. You know, go back over all of the particular cases. But the local board was composed of a wide variety of people. You know, some of whom are, I would say, pro-cop, at least now, many of whom are really decidedly anti-cop, and several of whom are just kind of concerned citizens who are interested in fair. And I had great hopes for this committee, and I've told you many times, my hope that they would do a great job has never materialized. And I'm not surprised at this point because they've done some dumb things. They've done some ineffective things. They haven't been as productive as they could be. They've really shown, as a body, and I know for any individuals, and I know a lot of them listen to this show, a lot of the individuals I don't have criticisms for, but, you know, I'm thinking of them as a group, as an entity, what they've done, and it hasn't been all that productive, and it's been pretty counterproductive in a lot of ways. Not surprising when you get the folks that are on that committee all together in a room talking about something as difficult as race and justice and policing and crime. You know, to expect that it's all going to be candies and roses, I mean, that's not fair either. I didn't expect it to be uncontroversial. I just was hoping that it would be more productive. So now the mayor is saying, look, I don't get to form permanent committees.
I think two things have happened. I think the mayor's office can't have permanent standing committees, one. But two, I believe they were asked to get a report. They've gotten a report together. We will look to get that, and we'll see and go forward from there. If other things happen, we'll go forward from there.
So they're going to produce a report. They're in the process of doing this. And then he says he's going to look at the report. And then, you know, he didn't directly come out and say it's all over. But as close to it as Grover would ever do under these circumstances, that's what he said yesterday.
This particular time, I'm looking to see their report and what they do and what they're coming forward. But I don't see this particular committee. We'll see what happens as we look forward with their report. But I don't see this particular committee. They've been tasked with a certain task, and we'll look at it and go forward
see,
from there.
Right there, he almost came out and just said it. You know, I don't see this particular committee, these people going forward. And then he kind of shied away from it, which is, you know, that's just, again, that's a lot of times that's the way he talks. 437-1620, 437-1620. They have at least one more meeting. I think they, I, I don't know if they have more than one. I think the report is supposed to be next time. I listen to every single one of these meetings, every single minute of it, and even I sometimes forget where they've gotten to on some of their issues. Sometimes they go too fast, you know? Hey, let's make marijuana legal. Okay, you know, let's decriminalize possession amounts of marijuana. Okay, done, passed. Oh, what? Just in the middle of a meeting. And other times it's like months on end of trying to figure out something relatively small. Kind of a lot of navel-gazing, too. Kind of a lot of, you know, reflection upon the process or this. I have tried my best to follow along and be fair in my interpretation of their work. Meanwhile, the search for the Pensacola police chief is ongoing.
We have 48 applicants already, and it closes on March 31st is when it will close.
So that is ongoing, and it will close the end of this month, and then he'll make a decision. Of course, still a bit of a controversy in the fact that we opened this up for a nationwide search when you had a previous nationwide search to pick the current interim chief, Kevin Christman. I know a lot of folks in the department were not happy with the decision to make him the chief when Tommy Leiter retired and went over to work for Sheriff Simmons in the Sheriff's Department. But, you know, that's a bit of water under the bridge at this point, except that there's an election coming. And I still say this, I don't know what the outcome of this hiring process is going to be. I just don't know. Nobody knows. That's the point. It's a process. But I think from a political standpoint that I'm not the first one to say this or the only one to say this, but if Chief Christman doesn't wind up getting the job, I think Grover has a hard time getting reelected. Because he's not going to have the support of a lot of the law enforcement, and he needs it. Especially if David Morgan runs and he's running against the former sheriff, right? That's going to be a challenge for him. 437-1620, 437-1620. Meanwhile, hospitalizations are very, very low, under 30. In fact, I'll tell you, this is a note in my post that I've got up today. You know, normally I do a post every single day. I didn't do one yesterday, just didn't have time coming back off of vacation. But I did a post today. I'm going to update it with some charts when I get a few minutes to do it because I'm not going to do them every day anymore. I'm stopping the everyday post because they're not needed. The situation is so good locally, especially, that genuinely I don't need to do this every day. Now, we're still above 100 persons per 100,000, but we're so close. Like in Pensacola, in Escambia County, the per 100,000 infection rate is 111. We've been at like 1,200 was the peak in January, okay? We haven't been at under 100 since, goodness, October, and really barely then even, okay? And before that, it was like to last year, early part of the year, like June. And unless things change dramatically, and I'll keep tracking the data every day. Don't worry about that. There's no point in continuing to put up a post every day of green numbers. It's just, what's the use? Now, if the numbers come back, I'll still put one out like once a month or once a week, maybe twice a week, just depending on what I see in the numbers or what news there might be to give. But it's a lot of time to put the charts together. It's one thing to get the data that takes me a certain amount of time. Then to put the charts together takes another amount of time. And to put the graph charts together takes forever. It's an enormous time suck. So I'm not going to keep doing it unless it's really, you know, necessary. And it's just not at the moment. Local hospitalizations are at, you know, historic lows, 23 lowest since last summer. That's great news. It's still bad for those people, okay? There are still people dying, although in Escambia County, the death rate is, almost zero. We've got, three people died in the last week total, okay? There's zero numbers across the board for, like, the last 10 days except for just a couple of days. Santa Rosa County, similarly, the number of deaths is, I just moved the chart over. It's got two people have died in the last 10 days, 11 days. And that's not nothing. But compared to where we were, right? And for those people, it's horrible. And yes, still wear a mask. And yes, still social distance. We're not into the safe zone. Get your vaccine. I got mine yesterday at Brownsville. Easy peasy. Go back in a month for the Moderna second shot. Easy. Okay? If you can get vaccinated, get vaccinated. Wear your mask, social distance, wash your hands. Keep doing all the stuff. But in terms of like where we're at with the numbers, it's as good as it's been since last summer or before. Right now, locally. 518 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay.
Trying to buy homes here like you've never seen. You go ask these realtors, they've never seen anything like it here in Florida. they're leaving lockdown states to try to come to Florida because they can get their kids in school. They're able to do things, and you know, we trust them to make decisions for themselves, not locking them down.
Yeah, the other day I was actually at the governor, of course. The other day I was at Leadership Santa Rosa, and the tax appraiser in Santa Rosa County was showing a series of slides about home sales and just how hot the market is right now. And one of the weird slides was that I think the slide, I apologize for speaking on memory, I just don't have it right in front of me, but it was, I believe it was actual closings on homes, residential properties, in the last couple of months, which are actually down from where they had been. It's not because the market is slower. It's because there are no homes for sale. they will buy everything that's for sale, and there's nothing for sale, so the actual number of closed deals is down. 521 News Radio, 92.3 and AM 1620. People want to be here. People want to move to a free society. People love living in the South. They love living in, and I often feel like maybe they come visit in the winter and they're like, oh, yeah. Well, come back in July. Tell me if you still agree with the weather. But, look, it's not a surprise. Nobody's hiding the reality from him. 521 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Oh, by the way, he also had very interesting words for regarding the police. They're doing $1,000. He wants to do $1,000 bonus pay for every cop in the state as part of the money that's going to be coming from the feds. So that's kind of cool. I like his phrase here. This is kind of an interesting one.
And you may be able to do more. We're not saying that you can't do more, but we put a marker down saying, we want to make sure some want to defund the police. We want to refund the police in Florida. Yes, ma'am.
I'm not sure that that's the best buzz phrase, but, I'll take it. It's all right. 522, Cooper Davis is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. Coop?
Andrew, saw this key heads up now. Folks who need to get on board NAS Pensacola for the work day. We understand the West Gate at NAS is completely closed to traffic right now, and all drivers are being rerouted to the main gate. A base spokesman tells us a driver apparently slammed into the West Gate, causing some damage. Crews will be busy fixing it while the gate remains closed, and we don't know when.
You got to really miss badly on the West Gate to do that these days. Like, you got to be trying or passed out, basically, for that to happen. That's okay. Well, that's bad news.
Probably going to be more there.
Yeah,
I would think. The FBI now joining the investigation into yesterday's mass shooting that left 10 people dead in Colorado. FBI Denver tweeted that it had sent agents to Boulder at the request of the local police to help. After those shots were fired in the King Soopers grocery store, the gunman is in custody. 10 people, including a Boulder police officer, were killed.
That's terrible. It's
I hate that I'm reading it right now.
Yeah.
And that it isn't making my blood boil or my skin crawl. It isn't, because we hear about mass shootings in this country.
I know. It is easy to be inured to it for exactly that reason. And I know what my own reaction was is, I have a gun, I have a permit, I carry some of the time.
Right.
And every time I hear a case like this, I'm like, that's why I got to carry all the time.
Right.
I don't know that I would have made a difference. I don't know that anybody in there carrying would have made a difference. I mean, Colorado's an open carry state, I think. Like, 90% sure that's true. You don't even have to have a permit. But I know what my law enforcement friends are all thinking, which is, get a permit, get a gun, train, and carry.
Well, what I know is
when seconds count, cops are minutes away. That's just the reality, unfortunately.
And at the end of this one, the bad guy's still alive, and then 10 other people are dead.
Yeah.
And a Bay County man is dead after a base jumping attempt turned rather tragic. Panama City Beach police yesterday identified this man as 31-year-old Timothy Dale Ackerman. The Panama City Beach resident died Sunday after his parachute failed to open in time during a jump from the 23rd floor of the Sunrise Beach Resort on Front Beach Road.
It's, any word whether he's done this before? Do we know anything about, like, was it a thing?
I don't know.
23 stories just doesn't seem like a lot.
I mean, you jump and pull, don't you, pretty much? I mean, that's like, I mean, I'm just,
I don't know,
this is not a sport that intrigues me particularly, so I don't know a lot about it, but
I know that, what Davis said about a 23rd floor jump, I mean, that seems low for base jumping.
Yeah, I agree. Even. Like, but that's about as much as you'd get in Panama City, right? I mean,
right.
So,
like, how much room do you need for your parachute to deploy? 23 feet or 23 stories doesn't really seem that much.
I don't see people doing it. Yeah. Any rate, I don't know if this fella had any kind of experience really whatsoever, but, you know, we're in that spring break period.
And people try dumb things.
People try dumb stuff. Yeah.
Hey, you know, I bet you won't do it.
I won't do it.
Okay. Coop, thanks so much for the update. 526 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay.
Take it to Kansas. USC is on to the Sweet 16 for the first time since 2007.
So when it's 34 points and they don't start the clock at 3.5 seconds, whatever. It's all over. Listen, there's been a lot of misery in this tournament for a lot of people, myself included, Davis included, everybody included who picked any of the right teams. But the one happy note, Davis, I have happy news to report. My Ducks are still in. I lived in Oregon for 2 years, so I'm still a little bit of a Ducks fan. Ducks are still in it after upsetting Iowa. And you know who's out? The only team in college basketball that I genuinely despise. The Jayhawks. Kansas is out. And I hate them for the pettiest of reasons. They took Bill Self from Illini. So forever I hate the Jayhawks. We could have had so much. We could have had so much. And then instead he went there. So, so I'm always happy when Kansas is out. I picked him to lose last round. So Bama advances. FSU advanced in a tight one. Whew, that was a squeaker. And then, if you're on the other side of the bracket, like nobody's got anything. The other side of the bracket is like, you know, Oral Roberts, Arkansas, Villanova, Baylor. I mean, Baylor's still the number one they're in. But then, you know, you got just terrible that side of the bracket. I have one perfect eighth. Davis in my bracket. I have one perfect eighth. I have the Michigan FSU eighth is perfect,
yeah,
for me.
I called that matchup too.
All of those, like those six games, I got those all right, and that's it.
Mine just has red all over the board.
It's all red.
Like
terrible.
Not good. Just throw it away.
529, sorry, 530 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Coming up, we're going to talk about this a little bit with Matt Gaetz, who we interviewed yesterday. But coming up next Monday, there's going to be a town hall with Matt from 8 to 9. He'll be here in studio, and we'll take your calls. You know, we've done this before, so if you've been around the show long enough, you know. But take your calls, any subject, talk to your congressman. It's a radio town hall coming up Monday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Straightforward and simple, and it's true. The border is closed. We are expelling families, we are expelling single adults, and we've made a decision that we will not expel young, vulnerable children. I think we are executing on our plans, and quite frankly, when we are finished doing so, the American public will look back on this and say we secured our border and we upheld our values and our principles as a nation.
You know, this is DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, who was on all the shows on Sunday. And I'll tell you, if you want your blood to boil and you know any of the facts about the border, watch any of these interviews. It'll either drive you crazy how much he's lying or how badly he's not being pressed on the things he's lying about by many of the interviews. It's hard to watch, honestly. But, you know, if this is success, what would failure look like? Because, I mean, it's worse than under Trump by far. And when it was at all like this under Trump, the left had lost its mind over this stuff. Anyway, it's hard to stay just sort of neutral when you just watch craziness like this go on. Yesterday, we had a chance to talk to Matt Gaetz, our congressman, District 1 in the United States House of Representatives. Matt, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Thanks for having me, Andrew. And listening to that quote, you just hear the dangerous policy that emanates from it. Like, if you say unaccompanied minors get to stay no matter what, then people are going to send their unaccompanied minors. It's sort of like if you tell people that if you show up to the border with a kid, you're going to be treated differently. More people are going to show up with a kid, whether it's theirs or not, whether it's bought, sold, rented or not. And what we have on the border is absolutely a crisis. Let me just break down one data point that I'm concerned about. We are now encountering almost 600 unaccompanied minors every single day at the border.
Wow.
And that compounds very quickly because the paperwork, the bureaucratic strain on the system, the just amount of Border Patrol human activity to process and manage the crisis of one unaccompanied minor at the border. And then you start to get hundreds every day, and it's growing very, very rapidly. So we're seeing growth in all categories, but the growth in unaccompanied minors, really problematic.
Well, and, you know, as we all know, the pictures of, and I put this in air quotes, kids in cages that were so prevalent a couple of years ago. I mean, the kids are being kept in the same facilities, unless I'm mistaken. We just don't have the photos around as much, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're building new facilities, right? They're taking money that we wanted to use for the wall, border security, technology, surveillance, and they're converting those into processing centers for people to show up and then have their catch and release experience. Trump, the magic of the Trump immigration policy was that we were able to repatriate people in safe third countries, and we could have their asylum claims processed without them being in the United States. That's what brought the flow, from, 60, 70,000 a month down to, 20% of that toward the end of the Trump presidency. Now, just based on the trafficking routes that are being set up and the early numbers we're getting, it's not going to be long before we're, close to 100,000 a month that we're encountering or apprehending at the border. And, the tragedy is, this isn't something that's unsolvable, right?
Right.
If you reform the asylum system, do the border security, you actually can solve this problem.
Well, of course, conservatives have long said control the border first, then reform. And Democrats obviously want to try to do it, if at all, in the other direction. But look, you build the wall or you can build welcome centers. But, you got to pick one or the other, and we're going the other way. Hey, I wanted to add, just so I understand this particular problem, because I've been trying to wrap my brain around this, what is the path? What is the plan of people who send their 16-year-old? In my mind, it's get the 16-year-old in, get them on a path to citizenship, get them to be citizens, and then they can bring the family. Am I wrong? Is that the plan?
That's exactly right. And the scary part is the role the cartels play on both sides of the border. Oftentimes, the children are not just being sent, and wherever they end up is wherever they end up. Oftentimes, the kids are told, who to say a family member or a contact is in the United States. And oftentimes, the U.S. government is delivering these children right into the arms of cartels that exploit them. And in a way, the U.S. government has become the biggest human trafficker in the world because we're collecting these kids or other people at the border and then doing the cartel's work for them of moving those people into positions of exploitation. One other note, Joe Biden gave a statement that really troubled me about the border. He said, "Don't come now, wait until we get the system set up." And I want to be very clear. There's no system that should be extracting, 3% of the population of El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras, every month or two, and bringing those people into the United States. I think it's unrealistic to assume these tens of thousands of people every month from the Northern Triangle can come into our country, even legally. That doesn't seem right to me.
I have a hard time with this topic of border security and immigration because I just can't explain. I hate when I cannot explain why the other side does what it does or thinks what it thinks. Do you understand, or can you maybe shed some light on, why are the Democrats so tone deaf on border security and building a wall? It obviously works. It obviously worked, and it is obviously failing to not do it now. Why is it they don't get it, or they don't want to get it?
Well, at the end of the day, it's about voting. I mean, they want to expand the franchise, and they want to do it without the rigors and understanding of U.S. citizenship, because in many of these states now, they're eroding the ID requirements so that it's easier for people who are not legally in our country to vote. The other thing is that, like, the number one demographic where Republicans gained ground in the 2020 election was with Hispanics. And so Democrats believe that this policy on the border might help them recapture that ground. I actually think there's something to the fact that, like, Donald Trump built the wall. Everybody called him a racist, and he got a great, he got more Hispanic votes than John McCain, mm-hmm. who offered amnesty. There might be something there.
Yeah, no, and obviously with what we know here in Florida, in South Florida, the Hispanic vote does not go to the Democrats, and that's because they came here for freedom, and they understand our system, and we appreciate that. One thing I definitely want to take a second and promote, you and I are going to be spending more time together next week from 8 to 9. We're actually going to be doing a full one-hour call-in, town hall, text, and call and talk to your congressman, right?
Absolutely. I look forward to it. Love getting the questions from listeners, and it's just part of the struggle as we're getting people vaccinated. I'm hoping this is the last time I have to substitute a radio town hall for a live town hall, but you do those too. The great thing about 1620 is whether it's just on the radio or live and in person, you guys have got the capability to show up and do it. So this might be the last one with just our small group in the studio. And soon we'll be back out with our larger gatherings as the vaccination rate goes up.
Absolutely. And I remember the one we did out at the beach. We could do one maybe at Bruce Beach here in town until the bridges reopen or something like that. But, yeah, I'm with you. We'd love to be able to do one in person with folks. It's just different, and it's better. Matt Gaetz is our congressman, Northwest Florida, District 1. Matt, thanks so much for the time. We'll look forward to talking to you again. Again, that's going to be a little different time frame, though, next week from 8 to 9. Thanks so much, sir. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Andrew.
It's 5:47 here on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay.
Hey, brother, do you still believe in one another? Hey, sister, do you still believe in love, I wonder? Oh, if the sky comes falling down for you, there's nothing in this world I wouldn't do.
We do want to communicate the work on Main Street. That's ECUA work. It's not ours. We've been as frustrated as you. Many of our citizens have been expressing frustration on this. We've been trying to push them along. Unfortunately, it does appear that that is going to slip schedule into the second week of April for completion. But I can tell you, we've expressed our concerns to Bruce Woody and his team there that we would like to get that fixed as fast as possible.
So Mayor Grover Robinson yesterday talking about that work that's being done on westbound Main Street between DeVillers and B. That is going to be closed for another about 3 weeks minimum. ECUA had pushed back the envelope on how long that's going to take. That is an ECUA project, by the way, not a city project. So ECUA is cleaning out the storm drains, I believe, is what's going on there based on what I saw yesterday. So if you're going westbound on Main Street, you're not going westbound on Main Street at that particular point. 5:50 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Cooper Davis in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. Coop.
Andrew, police in Colorado just hours from giving an update now on that grocery store shooting. Investigators are still on scene right now gathering evidence at this time. There's no motive as to why a gunman opened fire on 9 customers, also killing the first officer to respond. A gun bill being discussed in Atlanta in the wake of last week's 3 deadly spa shootings. State lawmakers are considering legislation that would have buyers waiting 5 days. The proposal comes after it was revealed the subject bought his gun just hours before committing the crimes.
See, I understand the thinking. It's the passion argument why you have a waiting period on any kind of a gun. And it's understandable, but you also have, which, I mean, it's a significant problem, okay? People who are depressed, suicidal, or angry, all the different reasons that people might wrongly want to acquire a gun. And so that's an understandable argument. But on the other side, when somebody is threatening me, how long should I have to wait to be able to protect myself? Or how long should, you know, some now unfortunately 21-year-old woman, but, you know, any young lady or an elderly person be forced to wait to protect themselves if they perceive themselves to be in a threat? That's the balancing question that,
well,
you always have to ask.
I would raise this, a balancing question, okay, of how many people don't have a gun but need it in 5 days versus how many people would need a gun but don't have it in 5 days.
Well, how many people can't get one in 3 days is a more common waiting period and would legitimately have a reason versus illegitimate use? That's the right question. I mean, it's a fair question. Yeah.
Right. And then I was going to mention this. It looks like AstraZeneca's COVID vaccine is raising doubt now. The company said yesterday its trial shows the vaccine is 79% effective in preventing symptoms, but health officials say outdated info from a large U.S. trial may have been used in that.
Oh, so that's brand new information, because yesterday all the news was good news, fourth vaccine coming, 100% effective at preventing serious health problems and death.
Maybe not so much.
So, yeah, this AstraZeneca one, it's interesting because there hasn't yet been any evidence that holds up that it's a problem. But it's been the one where there's kind of been hiccups along the way more than the others. And like the blood clot stuff turns out not to be a big thing, but that was the news for a while. It was about the blood clot worries, which, again, turns out to be nothing, but still. And now you got another one. So I'm interested to see how that turns out. This is why you go through a process.
You would think that they would know more how to make an effective vaccine, but I know that they're all competitors. So there's that.
All right, Coop, is that it, sir?
That's that.
All right, excellent. 5:53 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. What else do we have going on? I thought there was one other thing that I wanted to tell you about, and then it kind of just went straight out of my head, so I apologize. do I have time to get into this right now? Okay. I don't have the heart to do it right now. I was thinking about, like, what's the thing that I just, it takes a couple of minutes sometimes to do a topic. I'll do this. Let me play one clip from the mayor yesterday. Okay, here, this is about the gun buy program.
On the gun buy program?
Yes.
So when I was there were definitely reports of guns that were homemade guns, cheap guns, poor quality guns, and things like that. Would you care to comment on the kinds of things that were bought and whether you think they were worth the money that was spent?
Again, from that standpoint, we'll look to see. I do know that there's an individual who tried to sell homemade guns and air pistols that was not allowed to, and those certainly weren't the things that we were looking for. And I think he was a little upset by it, but you know, again, that was not what we were looking for.
So, yes. Now, here's the truth of it all. The mayor spent quite a bit of time yesterday saying that, you know, there were no pellet guns bought by the program. There were no homemade guns bought by the program. That's true. But that's not the whole truth. All the guns that were bought were indeed the firearms. They were indeed, you know, something would have to explode and then a projectile has to come out. So that's true. And no pellet guns were eligible for the purchase. But as far as the homemade gun, that Boomstick 1776, what I have been told is that that person was in line approved to sell that gun, would have been able to sell it, but that's right when they ran out of money. So, no, the city didn't buy the Boomstick, but the city was going to buy it had other people not sold too many guns prior to that. So take that as you will. You can't report it as a bought item, but you can't report it as a, well, you know, we wouldn't have made any mistakes. And I'll tell you, having looked at these pictures, I've seen various comments about this on our Facebook post. People trying to give an estimate of what they think that $10,000 worth of guns would actually sell for. The general range is somewhere between like $1,500 to $3,000 for the $10,000. Because they're all, most all, there's like one or two in there that might have been like legitimate firearms that are worth more, but most of them are in very rough condition, partial condition, you know, pieces missing, falling off, rusted, you know, grandpa's, 32 that was wrapped in a linseed oil cloth for 18 years in the garage underneath the sawdust pile, you know, that kind of thing. That's what they were. This was mostly old folks came in and sold their guns, you know, one at a time. That's mostly what happened. So the notion that this got a bunch of gang weapons off the street, no, sir. Did it maybe get a few that might have been inappropriately used otherwise? Sure, yeah, okay. And honestly, I was hoping, this sounds weird, but I always hope I'm wrong in the sense that I hope if when people disagree with me and that we do what they want, I hope that they turn out to be right. Because that means we did the right thing and I was wrong about it. That's, I'd rather have that than, see, I told you so. But this was definitely a see, I told you so. It's just, this was a big waste of money. And it's only $10,000. And I will still say this, if we imagine that it would save one life, $10,000 is a small price to pay. But it's hard to imagine. I mean, I will say this. The life we might have saved was the life that somebody accidentally lost when they were trying to shoot one of these guns. Because I would not shoot almost any of these guns without really good face and hand protection. They're that rough looking. 557, you see it on our Facebook page if you want to see the pictures. 557 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. But again, just to make sure to clarify, no homemade guns were actually bought. No pellet guns were actually bought. That's all correct. For those of you who've been worried about the Bright Futures bill, two notes. Number one, they keep revising it. Every time it goes before a committee, it gets a revision. Baxley keeps realizing how badly he has botched all of this. The pushback from especially homeschoolers has been fierce. Alex Andrade told us yesterday that he doesn't think this bill is going to go anywhere in the House. It's not been filed in the House. The education chair says he will not. He's not interested in it. And the revisions keep making it less and less of a problem. The one thing that still remains as a problem is the funding mechanism not being guaranteed at 175% as it is right now. That's the only thing left that is a big problem in this bill that keeps getting revised down and down.